You're listening to CodeCast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. We are growing the community of developers across Zambia, one line of code at a time. Visit agoracode.community for more information, or like us on Facebook, at CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, at CodeAgora.
I'm Daniel Piri, community lead and developer advocate, and you're listening to CodeCast Zambia.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 8 of CodeCast. It's going to be another really awesome podcast. Excited to have the team reunited again, though we're missing Cynthia and Wesley today.
Cynthia isn't doing well, and Wesley has some prior arrangements, but in his stead, we have
Muyu.
Yeah.
Full stack developer.
Sure. Oh, really?
Yes.
Full stack developer.
Yes.
So Muyu just gave away our topic for today. We are discussing, it's full stack engineering when you think about it, but we're going to dumb it down a little bit.
Yeah.
We're talking about knowing everything and being a jack of all trades when it comes to being a software developer, software engineer. I think this kind of applies in almost every single entity, every single job role. It's not just, you know.
You kind of fall into one or the other.
One or the other.
Yeah. So, yeah. But
yeah, before we get into that.
Yeah, we've got some big
news. Hey, Lars has got a lot to get off his chest.
Look, don't say it like that.
Dude, you've been talking to me about this the entire day. You're not going to flake on me now.
Okay. I just really enjoy, you know, these. But I probably shouldn't enjoy it as much as I do, but I do. And for that, I apologize. We also have a disclaimer. We're going to be talking about Facebook, so Mboyo might not chime in. But that's not going to stop us from going hard.
Of course not.
It never does. We should get into the news.
Definitely. Please, take it away.
Okay, yeah, sure. Do we have a chime? Oh, that's Star Wars. Sorry.
No.
Okay, so in the news today, the big news, of course, is Facebook. They're in the news again. What did they do this time?
But dude, they've been in the news the entire year of 2018. I don't think there's anything that can surprise me now, to be honest.
Okay, so let me just go over what happened with Facebook. There was some involvement from Apple and some from Google, but this is all around Facebook going to many lengths to get user data. So basically what happened was from around 2016, there was an app called Project Atlas that was used to get data from users. It was basically Facebook paying users from ages 13 to 35, $20 a month, to allow their app access to the iOS, you know, platform. Like it's getting information and sending it to Facebook's VPNs. So basically sending the information to Facebook's server before it goes to wherever it needs to go. So that Facebook could track your, you know, habits, track what you do when you're using your phone.
Right.
Apparently it went as far as Facebook asking users to send screenshots of their Amazon order history.
No.
Yeah. Like it was that crazy. Okay. So all this happens, it comes to light. I think TechCrunch are the ones that broke the story.
Okay.
It comes to light. Facebook comes out with a quote. I don't know if I should read the whole quote or I should just surmise what they said. They basically said ScreenWise Meter OS. Wrong quote. My bad. They said, a spokesman from Facebook said, key facts about this market research program are being ignored. Despite early reports, there is nothing secret about this. It was called the Facebook Research App. It wasn't spying on all the people who signed up. It went through a clear onboarding process asking for their permission and were paid to participate. So basically what Facebook is saying, look, we told the people what this was and it's okay. Apple comes in and they say, first of all, Facebook say, okay, but we're going to take the app down. Apple comes in, they say, okay, you see, you clearly violated our policy, the policy for their enterprise certificate, which is basically a way for developers to get around the app store, say for testing purposes. We've actually taken part in some of these. I'm not going to mention the apps, but there have been apps that have been on this kind of onboarding process.
Yeah.
So Apple says, no, you broke the rules, you're going to have to pay. So they revoke their certificate.
Yeah.
And what happens is Facebook use internal apps for their staff, and those apps are all tied to the same certificate. so they all stop working.
Oh, okay. So what you're basically saying is, they broke a rule, and then Apple cut them off. Now, not just cut off that one app, but cut off all the apps internally. So if I work for a company, we don't have, like, we have, let's say we like to make our lunchtime efficient. So we have an app that tells you when lunch is ready. So basically, the company violates one policy, and then you don't have access to that sort of platform.
Yeah, exactly. So all the apps that had to do with Facebook's workflow were not working for about 2 days. It was later reinstated, I think, yesterday.
Okay.
And it's working now, but it just shows you the power that Apple wields. I feel like we should also be a little scared of that. But it's basically Apple saying, look, you broke the rules, so this license that you use for multiple apps, not just the app that was in question, we're revoking it, so it blocks all the apps.
Okay, but I understand that happened to Google as well.
Yes, it did. So Google later comes out and they have this app called Screenwise Meter.
Okay.
It's also an iOS app. It comes out that it's similar to Facebook's research app, but Google come out with a code saying the Screenwise Meter iOS should not have operated under Apple's Developer Enterprise Program. This was a mistake. We apologize. We have disabled this app on iOS devices. This app is completely voluntary and always has been. We've been upfront with users in the way that we use the data from the app, and we have no access to encrypted data. So, almost the flip side of like big companies' PR, right? Facebook saying, hey, look, people knew what they were getting into, and then Google coming out and saying, look, we're sorry we did this, whatnot. Case on point, they're both wrong. They both did the same thing. But it's actually pretty interesting how the two companies approached it. So Apple does the same thing to Google, and the same thing happens with Google's internal apps. Like famously, like their is it G-Bus? Like one of their internal apps that they use for like the
logistics
buses
and transportation. Yeah.
Yeah. Stops working. So you can imagine being an employee at Google and this app that you use to get, like, to commute back and forth stops working. Now you have to find another way to get home. Like, just put you in the headspace of what was going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they get, I think, reinstated, like, a few hours, if not, like, a day later.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is peachy. And then Apple comes out with a statement basically saying, yeah, we've been working closely with Google. A completely different tack that they've been taking with Facebook. Because, like, we know that Facebook and Apple have been kind of butting heads recently. Like, the Apple CEO, Tim Cook, came out and he's like, yo, this is ridiculous what is happening with Facebook. Facebook need to respect people's data, whatnot. And Zuckerberg comes out and say, yo, but you guys charge people all this money. Well, why are you out here talking shit? And then, like, it's a whole, like fisticuffs. Yeah, like...
But we kind of have to give Apple kudos, though. I feel like this was fair play. Regardless of whether someone apologizes or not, I feel like consequences still need to be felt. And it kind of goes back into, I mean, we had an episode on ecosystem lock-ins, we had an episode on user privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if there's more punishment, this is why I love the EU, man. The EU doesn't play.
Yeah, they are not messing around. Like, it's actually becoming really apparent that a lot of these companies will go to great lengths to get your data. So we need to have a kind of screen to protect from that.
And I'll say this again. I say this all the time. First person that is responsible to protect the user is the user themselves. And I think we should stop calling them user. If you're out there and you're listening to this, if you have a smartphone, you have an internet connection, please read those things that you like pressing next on. You know, your contracts, your...
As long as they may seem.
Yeah, as long as they may seem. Because at the end of the day, you have no idea what people are collecting.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back to also the Cambridge Analytica thing. Like,
yeah.
It's all this stuff that we don't read. And we always, it's laziness, basically.
Yeah.
So who really is to blame? Who's letting these companies get away with all this stuff? It's on two fronts.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But in this case specifically, I feel like it can't be stressed enough how bad the situation is, because Facebook were paying 13-year-olds.
$20.
$20 to get their information.
Yeah, I could do with the $20 right now.
Okay, look. Let's financial issues aside. like, a 13-year-old kid is going to take a $20 regardless of what you tell them, regardless of what you ask them to read.
Definitely.
Okay, so it's kind of, it's not a good look. Now, I should also say that Google's ScreenWise Meter app was also doing the same thing, except I think theirs, it was 18 and above, but if you are below 18, so 13 to 18, you can be part of like a family group, basically like part of a family account.
Okay.
I mean, look at it however you want. I think, yeah, like Apple putting like a stamp on this and saying, you're not going to do this, we're going to revoke your thing. And basically, like, it's basically like a power play, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like, yo, like,
I'm sure you're on
yeah,
boss.
Yeah. And then like, they had to adhere to it because like, we all talk about how like, in countries like ours, Zambia, iPhone is not big, but like in other places around the world, it's huge. And that is a huge chunk of their market that they cannot afford to lose.
Yeah. Especially that I think
the
projections regarding profits the last few weeks that have surfaced where Apple are talking about actually not doing as well as they expected.
Yeah, so their revenue actually dropped. That's another news item, but like, I think we knew about this because they talked about how their iPhone sales are not as good as they expected, how they projected. So we know that Apple is, you know, I don't want to say floundering because they're still like the richest company in the world, but they're not doing great by Apple standards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was really interesting.
Yeah. Here's a question though.
Yeah.
Before we move on. I can't ask you this because you're not on my iPhone, but let me ask from an Android perspective. If Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, basically Facebook's apps, if they were not on Android, would you switch to iOS?
No.
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 You just find an alternative, right?
Find an alternative.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest fear that Facebook has right now, because this power play basically showed that, hey, look, if we take you off your platforms, no one is going to switch platforms for your apps.
Mm.
Yeah.
But if that happened, Google, I would.
See, here's the thing, right? Google is different because Google, a lot of their apps have to do with workflow.
Yeah,
which is
like
important.
My life is literally tied into a lot of Google apps.
Yeah.
And again, I'm hugely dependent on a lot of Google apps.
Here's the funny thing. Even if that happened, and I think my life is just as tied into Google as yours is, I don't know if I'll switch.
Yeah. No, we don't know. Moving
nice.
On.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just run through the other news items really quick. Apple had a bug. Apple's in the news pretty much as Facebook is today. But they were in the they had a bug with their FaceTime, which was basically allowing people to listen in on calls before the recipient.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah.
FaceTime, right? And
yeah.
The kid found out about that, and
yeah.
There's this whole you can claim when you find a bug and whatnot. Did
yeah.
they actually pay that kid?
I don't know if they paid the kid, but I do know that if reports are to be believed, it is actually possible that this bug could have been around for as long as
FaceTime
3 months.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily FaceTime, because it's a bug to do with group FaceTime, right?
Oh, okay.
So about 3 months ago in iOS 12.1, I think, they released group FaceTime. You can talk to about like up to 32 people.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
I had an iPhone when that came
out. Yeah, so they released it. There was actually a bug when it released that allowed you to bypass the lock screen and get to someone's contacts when there's a FaceTime call without putting in a passcode. And now there's this bug, and this is kind of getting you thinking, like, what is happening with this FaceTime thing? Because initially it was supposed to come out with iOS 12, but it was delayed to iOS 12.1. Came out with a bug, and now another bug has been discovered. Like,
I come from Android, there are bugs all the time.
That's actually my point. Like, this is so an Apple. Like, you can throw shade on like Apple and whatnot, but like, what you give them props for is their quality of.
Quality,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's one thing.
So this is weird, right? And their sales are in the decline, but yeah. We have rumors about a Sonos headphone. I don't think that's really big news. I feel like Sonos was always going to get into headphones eventually.
Who's Sonos?
Sonos sound systems. Clearly not important.
Thank you.
We already talked about Apple's revenue declining. There have been new rumors that iPhone is going to come out with the USB-C port this year.
We can't keep running away from this. Really, this should have happened years ago.
Yeah, but no one thought it was going to happen until the iPad came out with USB Type-C. And I just thought it was interesting because they've had this lightning port for the longest time and people like suffered for it.
Yeah.
Like you walk into a house and you leave your cable at home and
yeah.
Okay, yeah, then Xbox Live went down. I feel like I should have just mentioned that because I experienced it firsthand. I turned on my Xbox and it was what they were calling at the time the black screen of death. Thankfully, it wasn't a hardware issue. It was a server-side issue. So they fixed it. And then, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I was listening to a podcast recently about...
A podcast?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Not Codecast?
Well, I listen to podcasts 10 times.
Okay, nice. Just.
Anyway, it was really tied into how lately there's a whole thing when it comes to systems going down and how important it is to communicate like with your customers, for example. And I think it doesn't really matter what line of business you're in. It's really important to let people know that they don't have access to a particular service.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. I think something for mine that's actually happening in the news right now is GitMerge, which at first sound...
You're like, what?
it kind of feels like you're back in the terminal and you know, but it's a Git conference basically that's happening in Belgium right now. I watched a couple of talks today and I wouldn't say I enjoyed all of them. I enjoyed one that kind of, I think I even tweeted about it. So this guy, I don't remember what his name is, was talking about how to organize your commits. That's one thing I've always had challenges with, like organizing my commits. What am I supposed to commit and when should I do it and stuff like that. So I don't know if this is a thing and I'll look into it, but he was talking about logical units where if you are editing like markups or something, that could be considered a logical unit and you could commit that. But then if you're doing a function that's tied into another one, you can't really commit unless you do both because they're tied into each other and stuff like that. So it's the little things that I picked up. And then something I actually haven't used yet, and that's Git Caller. I don't know if you guys have used it.
Git Caller now.
No, so it's like a terminal, like a fancy terminal, I guess, or something like that. That's something I'm going to get into after the conference is done. So there were a couple of good talks and workshops. I'll just run through some of the topics and stuff. So there's... Mike from Atlassian was talking about GitHooks, aliases, and that sort of thing. We had someone from GitHub talk about cleaning your repo. Then the 10 Git problems and how to fix them. I think I might actually enjoy this. This is from Brianna. She works at Git as well. And my favorite of all is workflow, because I have like this sticker on my wall that has like the whole GitHub workflow.
Yeah.
Like how the motions and stuff like that. And it helps me keep track of what I need to do and stuff like that. So.
I actually have a notepad thing. Like I just have the notes up here, so I always have them on hand.
Yeah. So I think by the time this episode is released, this conference would have been done. But it's on git-merge.com.
Okay.
We'll put the link in the description as well. Yeah. So that's all I had for news on my end. And that's it for news today.
No more news.
No more news.
Boy, you can come back now.
You can come back now.
Come back now. Good to be back.
Okay. So getting right into it. I think when we decided we're going to do this topic, I wasn't really as excited. But then after it's because it sounded too. I don't know. It wasn't really. Yeah. It wasn't really. I wasn't as excited as. Game development, for example, like it wasn't something that I thought it was a straightforward thing. Like, what are we going to talk about? Everyone knows what full stack is. And then when I like started reading about stuff, then I realized, oh, damn! Like people have choices. Like maybe we start from defining what all this stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get into that, I must say when I talk about having choices, right? Well, like when I'm making a career choice, like I thought, okay, I'm going to do computer science, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got into it. Then we started talking about software engineering
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff. I left university and then I got thrown into a job and all of a sudden I'm developing systems.
Mm-hmm.
But then 3 years down the line, I'm thinking, oh, like with the information I have now, I could have made better choices
yeah.
when career choice, first of all, and then when leaving uni, I would have had the right tools to get me where I am now faster and stuff. So maybe we could pick up from there. Like maybe Elias could start to tell us about your experience, what you feel, what you think being a developer is, what being a coder is.
Yeah, so like similar to yours, it's just kind of this thing where you have this career path, right? So you go to school for it, and then after school you get into a job and you start working at that job and doing what is required of the job. But for me, it was actually funny. So I'm not going to go into detail, but like at my current job, I'm a backend developer, and I was sort of given a choice when interviewing for the job, and I jumped on backend. And I think even before I went for these, I was talking about how I really want to get into backend
mm-hmm.
development as a profession. Maybe we should define these things before like I get to do. Yeah. We have backend developers, we have
front-end
developers,
yeah.
and we have full-stack
developers.
So right off the bat,
and we have IT guys.
yeah, those guys. So we
is that shady, lad?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
So we have a full-stack developer that is basically a combination of
backend
and front-end.
Yeah.
What a front-end developer is someone who is going to make Okay, let me explain.
Another example.
The client facing. So, if you don't know anything about development, when you go on a website, what you see is what we call the front end. How the things work, like
how they look.
Yeah, how they look, how everything is organized. All that stuff comes down to the front end. Like I'll give an analogy of a sports car, right? Things like the aerodynamics, you know, the like designing
the color,
body kit,
the color, shape.
you have your wings that are going to stop the car and whatnot, like that's front end. Aesthetics are a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Then your back end is basically dealing with the logic that does like
the
heart of the system. So.
Yeah.
When you go on Facebook, what determines what you see, because you're the one who's logged in and your photos are stored on a certain, it's stored in a table that is referencing you as a login. So you have access to these photos, all those things, like how you access the photos, like what you can do with those photos and basically how everything works underneath the hood is the back end. So, yeah, I'm a back-end developer, so you probably never see what I work on.
Yeah, you're like that guy that does work in the back and no one ever sees you.
Yeah,
the basement.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess that's why I can dress like this too. I'm in shorts, by the way.
Disclaimer, you can't see, but Lance is in shorts and a t-shirt.
And slippers. Yeah.
No, I have an injury, that's why.
Okay, so now that we've defined it, wait, did you finish talking about your history?
The reason why I gravitated more to backend is because I intrinsically am interested in how things work. And on the last episode, I was talking about how I got into development because I was wondering how games work.
Mm.
That has kind of stuck with me because to this day, yeah, things are going to look pretty on the front end and like, it all comes together when the front end is there, but how the stuff works, man, that's what gets me. So like I said, I was lucky enough to kind of be given a choice. Like I think I was asked what my preference is when I was applying for the job, and then I was tested based on that. So I think until I got to this job, I was kind of classified as a full stack developer. because I was working front end as well. And like Kumar said, it's kind of a career path, right? You go to school and you learn everything.
Yeah.
So when you start developing, you want to develop everything. You're not thinking of specializing or anything like that. Yeah. So when I went to this place, I realized, oh, I can just focus on what I want to focus on. Which is, let's just say I'm happy. I'm not a big fan of CSS, I'm just putting it out there.
CSS. There's a whole conversation around CSS needs to be updated. That's why you have people talking about CSS in JavaScript, but that's a whole conversation. If you like to know more about it, just search for CSS in JavaScript. The whole network is
crazy. Very crazy, right?
I guess your story is similar to mine. For me, I you know, you go to school, they teach you everything, and then you sort of think that as a developer you're supposed to know everything. But after finishing school and then you're thrown into the real world, you discover that actually you're supposed to know everything, but that's not the right way of doing things. There's specialization. For me, my interest, I started off as a front end because I like UI. I like seeing things work. And
you like Photoshop.
Yeah, I like Photoshop. So I got into mostly, when I started doing Android applications, mostly my interest was around how the application is looking like. I remember in 2014 at Google I/O, they introduced material design, and I was like, finally, Android looks the way it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
So learned, went through the documentation, learned how to sort of create UIs that looked really nice, and you know, always left that any part dealing with the server side of the application was left to a friend of mine. Because we were working on this small failed startup. Yeah. So eventually, as after finishing school and then getting into the real world, you discover that you're needed for a role that requires more logic. So now I was forced to go back to go on the back end side of things, start learning Laravel.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I ended up liking being able to write logic, being able to think about processes,
mm-hmm.
and you know, just, you know, whenever you write an API and you try to access it, data comes back to you. For me, that got me excited. And for 2 years I was strictly a backend
developer
until 4 months ago.
So
4 months ago, I got another job with a local delivery company called Musanga, and the first thing that they needed to get off was the front end side of things, their website. So that forced me to go and learn CSS, but I didn't actually do the CSS. I went and learned SAS because SAS was more modular.
I recently did SAS as well. It's pretty amazing. Huh?
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, the fact that you can create variables and...
It feels more object-oriented.
Yes.
Mm.
And like the chaos that is CSS. Give it up to now, if you give me CSS, I'll be like, Jesus Christ, no.
I did not get the trauma right now.
Have you seen that Peter GIF where he's trying to, you know, fix... bring down blinders.
Peter Griffin?
From Family Guy.
Yeah.
Yes. And that whole GIF describes the chaos of CSS.
You know what Peter Griffin... No, actually, Homer Simpson GIF I saw today, I guess it was a meme.
Yeah.
Of what front-end versus back-end.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll post the link to this particular meme. Like, it was funny. Like,
yeah.
He's facing March, and you know, it's so... His tummy is gone.
His dude is
fit. And then at the back, his tight is flab. And the back is the front end.
And
the back
end. So it's like front end and back end. Which I'll say, like, kind of accurate.
That's an accurate. Like,
right.
The chaos that is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's my story of how I ended up doing both front end and back end.
And back end.
So you would be classified
as
full stack
developer.
I don't think you could be, what would you classify yourself as?
You know, I'm a back end developer. Look, I won't even lie. Like, when it comes to the creative side, like, you know, I've never been able to draw since I was a kid. I think that should have been the first sign.
Me neither.
You know, I can draw sticks. That's as far as it goes.
So, well, technically, you can draw lines.
You're right. So, like, from that, even like with art, I'm a big fan of abstract art, which isn't even really organized when you really think about it. And it's more like canvas, actually. It's something that I've never really been able to do, like arranging graphics on a screen and getting them to look nice.
Oh, okay.
Like, for me, I'm more like Elias is, like, I'm interested in how things work under the hood.
Yeah.
Like, even in high school, we had this thing once where it was some Independence Day celebrations thing, and we were organizing some show or something.
Mm.
We were supposed to do, I forget the song, it's Black Eyed Peas.
Mm.
It's very, Where is the Love? Oh, yes, Where is the Love?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was pretty much immersed in making sure it happened, but I wasn't on stage.
Mm.
So it was one of those things where I enjoyed, like, pulling the strings so much.
Yeah.
I wasn't interested in being on stage and taking credit,
yeah,
for example.
Yeah.
Which is, like, when people go into a website and look at it, and it's so nice.
Yeah.
Like, it pretty much ends there.
Mm.
Like, people never really understand what's going on, making everything tick.
Mm.
You go to Google, it's so simple, right?
Yeah.
Someone types in, like a search request,
yeah,
or whatever. Like, you have no idea the hoops that server is going through to get you the data
to
in like 0.001 seconds or something like that. I'm not always fascinated by that.
But you know, lately, the definition of front end has sort of become blurred.
Mm-hmm.
In that, like, when you have frameworks like React,
yeah,
I've seen people who they can build the entire front end side of things in React, and they don't know any CSS. And they say, okay, so if you want to add styling, visuals, and everything, who does that? And they tell me, oh, I have a person who's good at a UI. Is a person who does all the CSS and everything. I do the front end logic side of things.
And you've got a point, really. And I guess maybe this could be like a good opportunity to kind of get into also like the entry point.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about getting into like software development, you want to make websites, you want to develop like whatever software you want to do, the building blocks, first of all, if you're doing front end development, for example, is the stuff you're talking about, the SAS, the CSS, the HTML, like the building blocks, the foundation of it all, before you even get to the JavaScript and the frameworks and React and whatnot. It's really interesting because the way, like, I don't know if you guys have seen the state of web development for 2018. Like, the lines are blurred, like you're saying. When you look at the stacks, you know, I'm coming from a LAMP stack background, which is basically
Linux,
Apache, you know, PHP.
What's AMP again?
You know what? I don't know.
LAMP.
Yes.
What's AMP in LAMP?
I was going to say Mongo, but I know that.
Anyway, moving along, because now it's getting embarrassing.
Yeah.
Moving along.
That's my bad.
Moving along, like the main stack or the main stack, for example,
yeah,
like all these funny abbreviations, we'll put in like links in the background.
Yeah.
So you can do everything, like I'm saying. You do your front end stuff, you plug in you can even do front end logic that just picks data from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, it's picking data from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the lines between logic and, you know, the whole back end process, we have to factor in the whole database issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, back end isn't just about organizing logic in the, you know, in your application. It's also about making sure your infrastructure works,
yeah,
your network works,
yeah,
you know, performance and all that stuff. Like, that stuff still has to be factored in. So what I'm beginning to see is there's a shift, right?
Mm.
Before, there was a clear-cut line, like you alluded to. There's a clear-cut line. Front-end is HTML, CSS, JavaScript,
that's it.
Now, it's a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You can handle some of the performance issues from the front-end logic side, and you can actually pick where you want to process your data from, and so on and so forth.
There's this thing called code speeding, I don't know if you guys are heard about?
Please go ahead, you can explain.
Yeah. So, code splitting, as I learned from my colleague Olivier, is where your front end can be structured in a way that the application only serves the user code that's needed instead of giving the user everything at once. And that's what's happening on the front end.
Yeah. Okay, so it's like lazy loading from the front end.
Yeah.
The front end. Okay. Yeah, for me, yeah, I agree. The lines are getting blurred, especially considering like we talked about like something like a mean stack. That is basically full stack, but you're using JavaScript.
Yeah.
So if you have knowledge of JavaScript just for the front end, now you can develop things that use, you know, the back end. I'll say this. For entry points, when it comes to like a career, I think it's important to at least understand what's going on in the front end. So don't just go, like, if you want to be a back end developer, don't just go and like develop or start learning the technologies that are going to like provide your back end, because you need to have at least a base understanding of what it takes to put that stuff on the screen, right? For the client side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have your, we talked about HTML, CSS, JavaScript. At the bare minimum, you have to understand how these things
kind of fit into it.
Even if you're going to, like, I, for example, I'm programming in Kotlin, right? But I know what is happening in the front end. I'm not completely blank. I'm not a full stack developer, but it still helps to understand how these things work.
Yeah.
And even though the lines are getting blurred, I think it's important, even while those lines are getting blurred, to understand what's going on with the whole project.
Sorry. I think in the essence of sort of like cutting down the topic of how to become a full stack
developer.
I think the perfect scenario would be you start from the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think understanding the front end, what the front end needs to do, helps you sort of discover what your back end should.
Yeah, so what you're pushing to the front end.
Hey, but guys, I have to admit, there's a serious debate about that. I don't know if you guys follow these conversations online. Entry points, for example, in terms of building an application.
Yeah.
Like, when you listen to arguments from a front-end perspective, so solid. You listen to arguments from a back-end perspective, also solid. Ever heard this little issue with designing the front-end and then finding out that your back-end won't deliver?
Yeah, the front end. It's kind of like expecting animations to be done by a backend server.
Yeah, it's crazy. I had a question though for Laz. We're talking about front end, back end, and full stack in relation to the web. What about traditional software systems?
So I guess it depends on the structure, right? So for example, you can have, let me talk about like a native mobile app, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have a native mobile app that...
Oh, the native mobile app just means it's a snap you download from the app store.
Yeah, the Facebook app, the Twitter app, the app store.
If you have to go to the Play Store or the, what do you call it?
The
app store.
Yeah, stress that. they took the name early, guys.
So if you have to go to the app store or the Play Store to download this app, then it's a native app.
Yeah. So, if your architecture is built in such a way that everything relies on your service, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like you have a REST API that is delivering everything you need. You can build a native app that is communicating with that, right? You can have versions of the REST API that differ depending on the platform,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it's the same thing across the board. It's delivering the same objects, and it just depends on what front end is accessing it and how it's going to deliver that information to the client. In that case, when you're building from a back end perspective, you don't really care what the front end looks like.
Yeah.
You're building your endpoints, you serve the data, and whatever client wants to access it, or whatever client has access to it, is going to access it. And then there are little things like if you want to save data offline and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's stuff that happens on the native side of the app. other apps, you know, you want to build it from the ground up, right, natively, so it's running on your phone. It might access data that is remote, so served from your server. But take, for example, what application? Problem, so many apps are now using services nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But take, for example, a game on a phone, right? Most of that is happening on the phone.
Yeah.
Okay, it might, you know, access a server to, you know, get that new thing. Yeah, so when you're building something like that, the front end is going to now become still what you're looking at, and there's a bit of logic there, but they're so intrinsically tied that that line that we're talking about being blurred is even more blurred, because now you're just building an Android app. And like for like a desk, like we learned Java, right?
Yeah.
But when we're learning Java, could you tell where the line was?
No.
Because
I was thinking about that actually when you were talking. Like,
yeah.
I think the first app we ever built, like in a Java class, was the calculator. And believe me, I can't even tell where the line is.
Yeah. Like you're building. There's almost no separation, right?
Yeah.
You're building the logic. You have your logic, and then you start going into the GUI, and you're building the GUI. And for you, it's all just one thing. So yeah, I feel, especially when you're not dealing with the web, that's when the line is the most blurred, because when you're building on a target machine, like you're building for Mac or you're building for Windows or you're building for Android or whatever it is, you're targeting a system as opposed to building out an API where you're like, okay, I just want to make sure that whatever front end wants access to this should be able to access this.
Mm.
Like, yeah.
I think the best way to simplify the whole blurredness of everything is, I think for me, it's as long as what you're building will mostly be the interaction side of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the front end.
Mm. So
as long as it's client facing, that's the front end. Whether you build an app and it's communicating to a backend service,
yeah.
Whether you build a website and it's communicating to your backend service, as long as it's front facing,
mm-hmm.
then that's front end. Even as mobile developers, like you find people who say, "Oh, I'm able to build a mobile application, but I don't set up the server side."
Mm, yeah.
So you can classify, for me, I feel like you can classify that person as a front-end developer.
Yeah.
In as much as there's more intricacies in actually spinning up the entire application,
yeah.
It's still front-facing.
Yeah. And while we're actually on that, let's talk about the saying, you know, jack of all trades, master of none.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like in my 2.5 years, right, developing systems right now, I'd say I've been a jack of all trades. Like you said, I set up the server. I set up the server side of stuff. I basically do my backend engineering. I do the frontend engineering. I never like it, but I still do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, put everything together.
CSS.
Yeah. And you know, the saying is real. Like you play with all these things all the time. You play with different bits and pieces of them, and you never quite master any of them really.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's why it's very difficult for me to classify myself as sometimes as a front end developer, but or even a full stack developer, because I feel like the roles switch all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I can even go a step further. I can't say I'm a JavaScript developer. I can't even say I'm a PHP developer,
mm.
or a Java developer, because again, it switches all
okay,
the
which
time.
Which programming language do you dream in?
Guys, I don't even know.
No, but I get what
it's a struggle I've had, genuine struggle that I've had, like picking something that I want to pursue. Like I'm playing around with a lot of things right now. Like.
Mm.
Pretty much anything that comes up, I'll pick it up and play with it for a little bit. But then,
mm.
you know, your work demands are different.
Yeah.
You know, it's different from when people are still in school, or
mm.
you have a lot more time on your hands.
Yeah.
You can play around with a lot of these other technologies.
Mm.
But when you're doing it for a living and their expectations and their deadlines,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Sometimes you get thrust into roles based on your profession. Right?
Mm.
What like what the people that are paying you are expecting, right? Yes. And sometimes it pans out and other times it doesn't, right?
Mm.
Like you're talking about having difficulties with classification, like I just said, like I was probably a full stack developer until I started working at this new place. With that said, I think the whole specialization thing is not something that's exclusive to software engineering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever profession you're in, like. If there's a form of specialization that you, we see this all the time in like things like medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
A doctor is not going to be a dentist and a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
They specialize, they have that separation so that the one thing that they're supposed to do, they have the time to get really good at doing it.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like it's almost a through line with professions. You don't expect a corporate lawyer to be it's at the defense of, I don't know how law works, but you get my point.
Yeah, no,
I know
it. What you just said ties into something else that I was really thinking about the last couple of months. You know, the landscape right now in the country, right, in Zambia, I don't know about Sub-Saharan Africa. I know South Africa are at an advanced stage now.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you should look at the index in terms of highest performing jobs in the region,
yeah,
and even in terms of roles. I think I mentioned something off air about the one-stop destination if you're looking for a high-paying job, for example. So Zambia is number one on that list across Africa. I'll send you a link and I'll put it up in the description. Believe it or not, Zambia was classified by the World Bank is the go-to destination if you're looking to get paid a lot of money. But when you go down into the actual roles, where this money actually is,
mm-hmm.
you look at, in Zambia, it's actually civil engineering.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about IT or software, it's really down that list. But if you go to places like South Africa, it's software engineers that are some of the highest paid in the country. And looking at the landscape, right, we are sort of a startup-driven kind of economy right now.
Yeah.
If we're not there yet, we're going there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the demands in a startup, I don't think they're going to hire front-end engineer specifically, they need you to be a full-stack engineer, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just thinking about that when we were talking, and I realized right now we're looking to create more full-stack developers, even though there will be masters of none in the beginning, so
mm-hmm.
we can kind of grow.
You know, your point actually echo my thought before the last one. Like looking at the landscape, our landscape doesn't really reflect much on the need to have someone who's highly dedicated to one aspect.
Yeah.
And because even when my other job, when they advertised, they were looking for a full stack developer. We're not looking for a front end or a back end developer. We're looking for one person who can do all those things. And in a way, it's nice, but I think it's one of the reasons why you have websites with terrible user experience.
Right.
Yeah, like
because they're so focused on making everything work.
Yes,
yeah.
I've seen some really really important websites which I cannot mention, and yet when you go to them, it's like you one of the worst experiences you can ever have.
Mm-hmm.
You literally dread going to the website.
Yeah.
Because the person who built that, maybe his main role naturally is someone who just considers the logic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, as a front end developer, you're supposed to also consider the user experience.
Yeah,
I believe
part of it, yeah.
It's very big, very big. Because it's not just about, oh, the person is able to click a button. How does that person feel
when they're on your website?
On your website.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of?
Mm.
You know the app I enjoy using the most every single year?
Mm.
It's the Google I/O app.
Mm.
Every single year. Because
yeah.
there's so much emphasis on user experience with that app. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I can tell you one thing. Look, this is a case in point. Surely for a lot of Android apps that are made in Zambia at the moment.
Yeah.
Like there's little or no attention paid to how someone will interact with that app,
yes.
and so on and so forth. And maybe we'll contradict ourselves a little bit here. I feel like we need a lot of front-end developer, like focus, like focus. Maybe it's the functions that shouldn't really work.
Yeah,
okay, so it's you don't want the pendulum to swing too far because, again, like, you're right. I feel like you're absolutely right. So many people are full-stack developers, but they're so focused on making sure it works.
Yeah.
And a lot of it working has to do with the back-end, right?
Yeah.
I feel like we've experienced this where you're like, okay, does it do this? Does it do A, B, C, D, E, B? Okay, stick a logo in the corner for that. You know what I mean? It's kind of that thing where, like, because you're full stack, the most important thing is that it works the way it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that comes from the back end. Yeah, like we've said, the line is blurring a little, but like people don't focus on, like, oh, when this person clicks this link, is it going to take them to a place that they would want to get?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to click 5 links to get to the place that I'm supposed to get to? You know, that kind of thing. Like, people don't really consider that thing.
And you know, what's interesting is that in as much as people don't consider that, it's those things that actually determine whether someone will come back to your service or not.
Yeah.
Like, take for example, I was using a named ATM. And you go there, it gives you all those options and everything, and you're trying to, you make a choice, right? At first, the experience tells you I'm touch based, but then as you're trying to get your way around it, then you suddenly discover that, oh, at this point, touch is not enabled. You have to use the keys.
I think I know the
do you think that's a bit of a security issue as well with ATMs?
Okay, here's the thing, right? ATMs is really tricky because they have to be secure. That's money. You don't play there.
I'm not gonna put a keyboard on the screen.
Yeah. No, that's
no, but I get what you mean.
It was simple selection. Simple selection.
Okay.
Yeah. So you see it's those tiny things. Also, you know, there's so many examples of where you really, like, I wish I could name the site so that maybe the people behind that site could, but I
you might name a website I built.
I've built terrible websites. I can't even lie. I think when I look at some of the code I've written, and we spoke about this earlier, like, I look at some of the code I've written, I'm ashamed.
Yeah.
And it's okay to be ashamed.
I mean, it's growth, right?
Yeah, and you know, in just what he said is what I was about to mention. Feedback is really important. There's two things that I see that don't happen, especially in terms of quality, for example.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to know that they're not doing their job from a front-end perspective if we don't, as people that are interacting with the thing, we don't tell them that we don't like this.
That's very interesting.
Because I'm trying to develop this thing where I leave reviews, especially in the Play Store or like for products and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like where you mention what you don't like or what you like, so
so
they can actually fix it or work on it or something. Mm-hmm. That's really important.
Feedback for an ATM.
I think you should take your chances at emailing them. Yeah. While I was saying that,
you're like, no.
So it's stuff like that. And for anyone that wants to get into this sort of thing, I feel like it's really, 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 really important to play around a little bit, like with everything, like you guys said. Play around with everything for a little bit and then find what you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We do this thing, Hashcode, every year, right? Which is coming up in February as well. You know, that's the most back-end focused event ever.
Yeah.
Like, Hashcode is a competition that Google runs. So most of the challenges are mostly data structures and algorithms centered.
Mm.
So if you have no idea what algorithms are or data structures, you're not going to do anything in this competition.
Yeah.
And if you really enjoy doing algorithms and this sort of thing, you find you really flourish. And it comes really naturally to you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to that point where you find something that you really enjoy and you flourish at, as much as possible, focus on it and grow. We talked about tools earlier. Like, for example, if you use Atom or you use Visual Studio Code, if you use it all the time, you get good at it.
Yeah.
It's the same principle that applies, I guess.
Yeah, like the more you do something, the better at it you get. It's basically an experience thing, as is.
But that's what happened with Jack of all trades.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, because you keep jumping from this joint to this joint to this joint to this joint, and then.
For me, like for those that are listening that are sort of new to this thing,
yeah.
I think a project-oriented approach, if you want to sort of learn the intricacies of everything and find your space, think of a small project. And then start working on it. As gradually as you go on that project, you discover that, oh, at first you created the homepage.
Mm-hmm.
And the homepage only had text and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say, okay, I want the login. Then that will force you to go into the backend side of things and
mm-hmm.
then start tapping into things like PHP,
mm-hmm.
Node for those that are interested in
mm-hmm.
JavaScript. And eventually, once you discover that, okay, I think I flow really well in building backends as opposed to UI, and hope that you go and you join a team
that
has
you that opportunity.
Specialist.
Yeah.
For me at work, we're fortunate to have Francis, who's like a really good front end guy. So anything cosmetics, anything that is relating to how the client is supposed to interact with the software, that's our guy.
Shout out Francis.
So that makes it easy for me to focus on, okay, how are we going to deploy this application? What's the backend? What's needed and all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that everything works.
Yeah.
So the ideal scenario is where you have team members that can do it specific part of the software,
yeah.
But that's not the ideal thing. That never usually happens in your industry.
Yeah,
unfortunately. Or in our context.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it will get better, guys. Don't worry. Like I feel like I keep saying this, right? Software, like people like say that software engineering in this country is where people want it to be, but I feel it's in a better place than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's only getting better, right? So if you're thinking about getting into software engineering, now is as good a time as any to get into it. And like the tips that we've given, I think will really help you decide what you want to specialize in, if at all you want to specialize.
And also, one of the things, I always try to say this to people that come to me and say, okay, the jobs, since most of the software in our country is outsourced and everything, do you think there's enough opportunity for more developers? And I always tell them, you know, I think we shouldn't always just limit ourselves to the our current environment. I mean, with the internet,
mm-hmm.
there's stuff like remote working. I have so many friends who tell me, oh, I'm working remote. You're like, okay, so this is now normal, eh?
Yeah.
Like it's so normal, you actually have friends who are doing that.
Yeah.
So you can become a good front-end developer and work remotely for a company that really knows what it wants from its employees or from its tech team. You can become a back-end developer for another company, just like that. So I think it's just making sure you find your space.
And you stick to your space, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one interesting statistic that I looked at earlier was, we talked about how duties are there and all that sort of thing. Right now, across the entire globe, right, we only have about 7% female representation in like the software space, whether it's front-end development, whether it's full-stack, whether it's back-end, and the other 92% is largely
male-dominated.
It's very, very interesting. Yeah, I guess it shows.
Yeah, the whole male podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I think for me, one of the things that I learned, one of the things that I'm trying to continuously like strive to do is to keep an open mind in terms of learning as well.
Yeah.
Because that never really stops.
Yeah, never.
and then never really getting sidetracked. Like you hear a new framework or you jump into the framework, you hear it jump into that framework as well, and next thing you're lost in like this wilderness of tools and frameworks and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Like that's like I think like we've all been there, right? You just want to touch everything and you end up like learning very little of everything.
That point is also really important. I think I've also been in, I've been there where you at some point you used to classify yourself as an Android, strictly an Android developer.
And
the
you're
next
like,
thing, oh, look, they came on. Yes!
Let me check that out.
Next thing you're jumping into web development, and you know, when you get into web development, especially in JavaScript, it's like a whole mess.
Yeah, it's like a whole mess.
Hey, did you guys see that state of JavaScript? that guy, I need to find this article put in the description. Like, it was a whole rant.
Really?
About
JavaScript. Oh, yeah.
He went off about how you start this framework, and all of a sudden something new comes out, and you're jumping out. The web is just a mess.
I think there's also another version where this guy who hasn't been doing web development for almost 10 years, the last time, at the time of the article, it was 2017. And then he goes to this friend and asks him, okay, so I want to get data from a database, and then get my app to render that data. So this guy goes like, oh, okay, you can use React. The guy asks, what's React? Next thing, it's like a whole wormhole. You know, like, you can use React, but React doesn't do this. You can use
Redux. Yes, I read that article.
Yeah.
I read that article as well.
So it's just a matter of finding your space. Personally, I've just settled for JavaScript. Whatever's going, even within JavaScript, whatever.
You have your own battles you're fighting. Huh?
Yes, within JavaScript, I'll just stick to Express.js for the backend and React for the frontend. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you find your niche, you stick to it, but not before you play around. It's very important to play around, see what you like. I think that's to build a small project if you need to.
Yeah.
If you don't have a version control system, please look it up, find out what it is, and use it to help you and stuff like that. One of the things I actually want to talk about was how easy it is, how the bar is getting lower. I don't know if you guys have heard, I don't know what his name is, but GitHub CEO has been talking a lot lately about how actually writing code is kind of phasing out. Or entering this phase of low code development, drag and drop. We can build logic and stuff like that. I think we see it with Stencil as well.
Yeah, Stencil, Scratch.
Scratch as well.
Yeah.
You can build logic without actually writing code. You understand the bare concept, how pretty much there's nothing complicated about programming. When you really like look down like at the bare minimum, there's nothing complicated. It's just how you want things to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like math, you know, in math, there's a particular way you do this, like many ways, physics as well. Same thing, you're building something, building that thing is up to you, how you want to put all the blocks.
Yeah.
Like Legos, I think Legos are the best example.
Yeah.
It's like using Legos and stuff like that.
Have you seen how crazy it is now to deploy a server with serverless technology?
I actually haven't looked into that yet. I haven't looked into microservices and serverless.
I haven't looked at it as well, but I was having a conversation with a friend, and he's telling me, well, it's just basically functions. Like, I'm sure you've experimented with Firebase.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen how easy it is with Firebase, where the you don't even think about where your so-called server is.
Yeah.
It's just, okay, load this token into your client side. Do you want to make any additions to the database?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do this, do that, call this function. And next thing
you know, you have
a chat messaging application. But I didn't even do anything on the back end.
For serverless, actually, I'd recommend going to Udemy. But there's a lot of free courses on AWS. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
So just go check that out. So to our listeners, if you want to look into that, check that out. Just so that you understand the integrity of what they call serverless. I think now there's even like hybrid, sort of.
June.
I'm not getting
in my niche.
I'm not in your niche.
I'm happy with Docker.
All that stuff. To be honest, this has been quite an emotional podcast for me because of how hard it touches home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, I think I'm going to get a lot of slack for saying that. But for me, I feel like the biggest hindrance to growth has been the fact that you don't really have access to the kind of information we have now.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even the willingness to not have access to this sort of
mm-hmm.
thing. I think we give examples of how you might be a lone developer, for example,
yeah.
busy practicing bad
code,
and you're comfortable and
you think you're learning, you're getting better.
You think you're improving, like in your space.
Yes.
In your space, you're like that guy,
yeah.
yes, and stuff like that. That's one of the things
yeah.
that.
But I think at this level, at least we're fortunate to be in a time where there's so many communities around where you now get to find people who like
yeah.
do
who can
stuff,
help you
stuff
what differently.
You
want to learn.
Yeah.
yeah, true.
But I'll say this: when you're getting into software engineering. And I actually started learning this pretty recently.
By the way, what's the difference between software engineering and development?
Same thing.
Oh, no. Difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I read about this a lot last year, actually. I was actually, when I went looking for this, I was actually looking for the classifications, like where the boundaries lie when we talk about information technology, computer science. Then we get into software engineering,
mm-hmm.
and then we get into software development. And even in development, there's software development and web development.
Yeah, so there's the three big ones, right?
Yeah, there's three big ones.
Programmer, a software developer, and a
software engineer. So an engineer is processes.
Yeah.
Processes and tools.
Yeah.
You may not even write code.
Yeah.
That's basically an engineer.
And that's what I was going to get into, right?
Yeah.
I'm learning now that the you know, it's easy to go in and say, okay, I'm just going to code and I'm going to do my thing.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go. But like, it's really important to understand the processes and like the standards that you want to keep, right?
Yes.
Like, it's really easy to go in and say, I'm just going to code.
Mm.
But you go in with no plan.
Yeah.
And you start realizing, okay, maybe I shouldn't have done this like this.
I shouldn't have used this database.
I shouldn't have used this database. I shouldn't have done that. And because you didn't want to go through the process,
yeah.
You end up with this huge amount of time you spent doing work that you probably not even
yeah.
to use.
And I know all three of us have been like through school, like
yeah.
To learn these processes and these tools and
yeah.
whatnot. And for the people that haven't, I think it's very, very important not to settle into the guru and the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've learned this on my own and
yeah.
I've done this.
I can do anything.
I can do anything. The truth is, you still need to read, you still need to talk to other people,
yeah.
you still need to. At the end of the day, what's driving everything? And this, it's actually just computer science, the performance, the everything, what's making everything possible and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, we don't practice computer science.
Also,
yeah.
also just touching on the difference of between a software developer and a software engineer. I also read the same things as you, in that like the engineer will look at
the whole workflow.
Why we're using this? What are the performance benefits?
Yeah.
How can we ensure that this application is so secure using all these
technologies
and stuff? For a developer, you literally, I'd say, the engineer would, if you use a house analogy, the engineer would be the guy who designs the entire blueprint and everything, and then. The developer is the
take blueprint. The blueprint
yeah
and then just like
yeah
actually
like,
yeah
puts
stack.
The building blocks and stuff
yes.
like that
and yeah like that's I think that's actually a really good analogy right because like you have the engineer that is going to like design everything and know okay this is how everything is going to go and developer comes and like puts the building blocks but even in engineering there's
specialization.
So in software engineering we have software
quality
assurance
requirements engineer
yeah
like
it's even there there's specialization
yes.
which I know in the Zambian context is,
one of the
yeah,
yeah,
yeah it's not really something that you know companies focus on but you have to keep that in mind that even in being a back-end developer I could specialize more
yeah.
And that's the goal. Like, look, we're talking about, I think in the last episode, I remember we talked about how we're not in a particular landscape, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we know we're going to get there at some point.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what we should always keep in mind, like the end goal. You're not going to be a full stack developer for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At some point, the environment will necessitate that
you
graduate.
Yeah.
Yeah, you shift to a more focused approach.
Yeah.
I think the best example is we've seen technologies die out, right? Legacy systems, the people that are still using maybe Haskell or like system and stuff like that. So right now there's a need for someone that understands that technology.
Yeah.
So you don't have to jump on every new wave. At some point, if WordPress ever died out, or PHP, God forbid, ever died out.
Facebook is built in.
Anyway, so like if those technologies ever died out, you still need those engineers to maintain those systems for as long as they
mm-hmm.
haven't changed. Like there's a lot of stuff, and we could go for hours and hours and hours talking about all these sort of stuff. I hope we can have more conversations around this, because we should talk about pay, for example.
Yeah.
There's lots of other stuff, like Elias just mentioned that there are different aspects of engineering,
mm-hmm.
software engineering, and it's important we talk about that as well, so
yeah.
people know. Like
yeah.
you're not confined to like one area,
yeah,
or,
yeah.
and there's certain aspects of it that don't even need you to know how to code, which is
yeah.
actually very
yeah.
important, because
yeah.
that's what scares people off about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And,
like,
and,
for example, UX, that's a people-oriented
yeah. approach. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're looking for more information, we're Podcast Zambia on Twitter. We are Podcast Zambia on Facebook or on Instagram. Now we're Podcast Zambia.
Yes, we are double tap.
Double tap. A lot. Yeah. So give us feedback on the show, on anything. We'll really love to know what you guys are up to. Please tweet us with whatever stack you're using and whatever classification you are. You're front end developer, you're back end. Tell us what tools you're using. We want to know that too. And we'll get chatting. So that's sour_bones on Twitter for me.
So here's my Twitter handle again.
Oh god.
JOR_ELI360. You know what?
You need a tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Like tweet at Codecast for suggestions on what my new Twitter handle should be. And I promise if I find a good one, I will change it.
Okay. For me, my Twitter handle is Mbuyu_. That's MBUYU_.
Okay, it's been real. You've been listening to podcasts. My name is Mukuma. It's Mbuyu and Elias in the studio today. It's been amazing. We're looking forward to the next one. Please don't forget to share the podcast. Give us feedback. Listen in. We'd love to know what you're doing, like I said before. And so yeah, that's it. See you on the next podcast. That's what they say, right? Or is it listening to the next podcast? Whatever.
We'll sense you.
Yeah, we'll sense you guys later. Bye.
Wow.
Podcast out.
Wow.
You've been listening to Codecast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. Visit agoracode.community for more information or like us on Facebook. That's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too @CodeAgora.